I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast was produced, the Jagera, Yugara and Yugarapal peoples. This is, was and always will be Indigenous land. And I would like to pay my respects to Elders past, present and emerging.
Talking for my piece of protest, I'm here to tell you a small story. I have separated from my wife 2017. Now I want to tell you this picture from right. Was 1 year. The second was 2 years, and now it's 3 years. I never met my son and with my wife. He's over there now. He don't know his father where. He don't know me.
You've just heard a protest outside of a hotel in the heart of Brisbane that's been declared an alternative place of detention by the Minister for Immigration. We spoke to Amnesty International's refugee advisor, Dr. Graham Tom, to explain what faces men, women and children that are seeking asylum in Australia.
Well, Australia is very interesting because while it has a mandatory detention policy whereby anybody who arrives undocumented has to be detained, there are all sorts of alternatives, usually at the discretion of the minister, where people can be held. So we have a mixture of people in detention in this country, right across the country. The majority are held in held detention centres, the IDC, Immigration Detention Centres, which include the Melbourne Immigration Transit Accommodation in Melbourne, the Brisbane Immigration Transit Accommodation in Brisbane. We have the Villawood Immigration Detention Centre here in Sydney. So there's approximately 1,200 people in held detention in those centres, and that's a mixture of people who've come seeking asylum, as well as people who have overstayed their visas, as well as criminal deportees, people who've committed offences and so have had their visa cancelled and are going to be returned to their country. At the same time, we have alternative places of detention. So the government can declare anywhere an alternative place of detention, and often it's a hotel. And currently we have a number of the people who've been brought back to Australia from PNG and Nauru through the Medivac housed in hotels. Again, the Mantra in Melbourne, Kangaroo Point in Brisbane, and we also have a small group of women from Nauru who are being held in the McCure Hotel up in Darwin. We also then have community detention or residence determination, whereby somebody can be taken out of any of those centres and put into a house in the suburb, any ordinary house where the government looks after them. They're free to come and go. The kids go to school. The only thing they can't do is work. They don't have any work rights. And then the government, if they want to, can also release people on bridging visas. So we have a significant number of people as well. A lot of the group that's known as the legacy caseload, who are still seeking asylum in this country, they're out on bridging visas. And they do have work rights, but they don't have access to the same welfare that other visa holders have. And so they're if they are desperate, reliant on a special type of assistance that, again, the Department of Immigration provides. So, you know, there are a number of alternatives open to the government. And unfortunately, it's the minister who has the discretion as to what happens to people once they're in that system. Because I think we need to remember that we've had over 1,000 people brought back to Australia from Nauru and from PNG for medical treatment. And this has been over a number of years. We know all the families, the women and children have come off Nauru. We've had men with horrible medical needs brought off PNG, off Manus. And virtually all of those people are in the community, in community detention. However, because of the Medivac bill and the Medivac legislation, we saw nearly 200 people come out through that that act, and those are the ones who've ended up in the APODs. They haven't been released into the community like the others who've been brought out for medical attention. So we have about 110 men in Kangaroo Point in Brisbane. There's about 65 men in the Mantra Hotel in Melbourne. And as I say, there's a small group of women who are also still detained up in Darwin as well, the last group of women who came off Nauru. Medivac only applied to people who couldn't get the medical treatment they needed on Nauru or PNG. So there was a fairly high bar that people had to get over, as well as also getting sign-off from the minister to be brought to Australia for medical treatment. And yet we know a number of these men have not yet received that medical treatment. And a number of these men need psychological treatment because of the impact it's had on their mental health. And the ability to provide that sort of care while people are still stuck in detention, you know, some of them have been stuck in those hotels for 8 months or more, you know, is very, very difficult. So if not impossible, and that's why we're starting to see again a decline in the mental health of the men who are being detained in those APODs. But yeah, it's men who've been brought out from PNG have been detained effectively for 7 years. You know, they were held on Manus Island in the RPC, what was called the Regional Processing Centre. It was a detention centre until October 2017. And then from there, because of the Supreme Court decision in PNG, they were moved into transit accommodation. But again, these were effectively just smaller detention centres. They could come and go during the day, but they had to be back at night. And, you know, they couldn't leave Manus Island. And obviously they were very fearful. They'd been attacked a number of times by locals. And so were very fearful of leaving the centres where they'd been moved to. And at the end of last year, they were transferred, all the men were transferred to Port Moresby. Again, they were put up in hotels in Port Moresby. Again, there is a curfew, so they can't move freely. They can only leave the hotels during the day. And again, a number of them have been physically attacked, badly attacked, so badly attacked that they've had to be transferred to Australia for medical treatment. More recently, we've seen the hotels attacked where the men have been housed by locals. So it's a very dangerous situation. And you know, some of these men are so psychologically damaged that they just don't leave their rooms in those hotels. So They've experienced a lot of trauma and ongoing detention for effectively 7 years, and that is what is now continuing to damage their mental health, being locked up again in these APODs.
I spoke to Chris Breen from the Melbourne Refugee Collective and asked him how he started working on asylum seeker issues. We also discussed the action the Melbourne Refugee Collective decided to take on Good Friday in response to the government's ongoing decision to use the Mantra Hotel as an alternative place of detention.
I was involved in sort of politics and student activism since the time I went to university. And it was probably not long after that, under John Howard, that I first started going to refugee rallies. But it was really the coalition sort of putting it front and centre of politics and, you know, Kevin Rudd then reopening things. So I got involved with RAC around 2010. Before that, which was Tony Abbott's time, before that I'd just gone to rallies. And so I then got involved in helping to organise. I used to be a graphic designer. And some of the first things I did was doing posters, the campaign, before I got involved. So, I've been involved for about 10 years now. Okay, so the protest you're talking about was the one that we held on Good Friday.
Yep.
So we were calling to free the refugees in the Mantra Hotel and those in a similar situation across in detention centres across Australia. So these are refugees who came to Australia under the Medivac legislation before the coalition scrapped it for treatment for health issues, which they often haven't received. They've been locked up for almost 7 years. It'll be 7 years to the date on July 19 this year, 6 years offshore and about a year here. And so we were calling to release them. And the threat of COVID-19 added a, you know, another layer on top of that. So already in a, you know, horrid situation, it really exacerbated their, you know, mental health concerns. The fact that they're unable to protect themselves, they're placed in a situation which is in breach of the Victorian health regulations, in close proximity with each other. So they're sleeping three to a room. There's a tiny kitchen and activity area that might have 15 or 20 people in it at any time. You know, there's guards coming in and out all day, probably at least as many as there are asylum seekers. In different shifts. The Mantra Hotel also used to host a whole lot of airline staff and international airline staff, which, you know, made their fears even more sharp. And so we were calling to release them because they should be released anyway, and also saying that the threat of COVID-19 made that urgent. Called a car convoy, a safe car convoy that would have no more than two people per household in each car. And we were going to drive around the Mantra Hotel three times and then go down High Street and disperse. But as it turned out, that didn't happen. As soon as I didn't get to go, I'll tell you that story in a little bit, but as soon as refugee supporters got there, the police turned up, shut the protest down completely, and everyone in a car, which was 30 people, were given fines of $1,652 each, a total of $50,000. And I didn't get to go to the protest itself. Police turned up at my house 2 hours beforehand, about 12 midday. I was just about to have lunch. Knocked on my door and asked me if I was the organiser. I said I was one of the organisers. And they arrested me for incitement, which is a crime under the 1958 Crimes Act. I was taken to Preston Police Station, where I spent 9 hours in a cell. While they tried to get a warrant, which they finally got, I should add that the police themselves, you know, didn't have any social distancing. I had to sit with three of them in a car and wait for half an hour to get into the station, because there was a bail hearing going on. And then when they drove me back with three different police, you had six police come through my small house once they got a warrant. Again, no social distancing. They seized all of my computers, my 15-year-old son's computer, my phone, on the basis that they were trying to look for evidence of who'd created, because my phone number was on the Facebook, but they wanted more evidence of that. But, you know, nothing we do is secret. It's all public. I put out the media releases. And a couple of weeks later, a good thing was Fitzroy Legal Centre helped me and we went to court and a magistrate ordered them to give all of my things back. So I've now got my computers. My son's got his computer. But I'm still facing the charge of incitement, and the first mention hearing will be 6th of August, although the case itself won't be till later in the year. And the refugee supporters are also going to be challenging the fine, so I'll be pleading not guilty. Things are as bad as they have ever been. You know, 2 weeks ago, there was a Tamil man, 32 years old, who attempted suicide by hanging and was taken to a hospital unconscious. Like, 7 years, it breaks people. It's intended to break people, and it does. When he was returned, he wasn't returned to new people, but to Mitre Detention Centre in Broadmeadows, which is some suburbs away. And he was placed in solitary confinement for 5 days. And I couldn't think of anything more cruel to do to somebody in that situation. The refugees themselves are still having daily protests about their situation. You know, they're stuck in rooms 23 hours a day. I mean, people often associate hotels with holidays. And so it's kind of absurd that it's become a place of torture for refugees, but they have. They can't open the windows to get fresh air. They can't get outside for exercise. It's permanent quarantine, indefinite quarantine for these refugees. And many of them have got underlying health conditions, you know, from kidney disease to Crohn's disease to, you know, asthma, diabetes, mental health issues. And in many cases, they haven't received the treatment which they came here for. So I know people have been waiting months to get, you know, appointments for mental health. There's another man who was told that rather than being given a bridge for his teeth, which rotted on Manus Island, he would have to have them all removed and get a plate because it was cheaper. And these things just again and again. The good thing is that we have shone a light on what is happening at the Mantra Hotel, and our numbers are growing. So before Good Friday, after the lockdown, you know, we were having meetings of about 20 people. We're now having meetings of 40 people. This is online by Zoom. Support is growing. There's a whole lot of locals who live around the Mantra Hotel in Preston who are getting involved. The Labor MP, Jed Carney, after the protest that we held just on Saturday, tweeted her support not only to release the refugees, but congratulating everybody who was protesting, which is an important break in, you know, some of the bipartisan, cruelty towards refugees. And we'd certainly encourage more Labor people to speak out. I mean, Premier Daniel Andrews played an important role around the Let Them Stay campaign, but has been completely silent on the Mantra refugees. And, you know, we would say rather than letting Victoria Police harass those of us who are drawing attention to what's going on, he could use the health regulations in Victoria to free the refugees. Like, this is just an appalling situation which has gone on for far too long.
In Brisbane, activists began an Exercise for Refugees event every Friday around the hotel that has been declared an alternative place of detention by the minister. Long-time refugee activist, Socialist Alliance member and medical practitioner Dr. Carla Emanuel talks about her involvement in campaigning, the Kangaroo Point action, and her fining by the Queensland Police.
I've been a supporter of justice for refugees since I became politically aware in the early 1990s, and I was one of the a founding activist with Tasmanians for Refugees in the late 90s. And I'm pretty sure I was probably involved in refugee rights activities in Newcastle before that, but I particularly remember in the 90s when after the election of the Howard government, yep, particularly with the Tampa affair, that a lot of a lot of grassroots community engagement about trying to counter the lies about refugees as queue jumpers and trying to counter the policy of indefinite mandatory detention of refugees. And then I was involved for a little bit in I was involved a little bit with the Refugee Rights Action Network in Western Australia for some of the years that I was living there, sometimes more actively participating, in going along to some of the Refugee Rights Action Network meetings and taking responsibility for organising, and sometimes more as a supporter, as in going along to protests and rallies and so forth. And so when I moved to Brisbane, if RAC, the activist group here, organised an event, I would go along to it. And so it was, I think that the way refugees have been treated for decades has been wrong, and I would want to support any refugees or asylum seekers on any issues that I had the capacity to respond to. But I think, and whether or not as a medical practitioner, and everyone knows, and as a doctor, I know it as well, that that it's that refugees need healthcare. And so the fact that that the refugees detained at the Kangaroo Point alternative place of detention are people who have been medevaced to Australia for healthcare. The fact that my understanding is that they've been medevaced here for healthcare and aren't getting healthcare, I mean, that's one issue that needs to be addressed. And as a doctor and as a person who has ever accessed healthcare, I think that that's really important. And then there's the whole issue of the COVID-19 at a time when everyone in the community has needed to, practice physical distancing and do what we could to reduce the spread of COVID, of the virus, and also knowing that there are some populations that are more vulnerable than others. Now, a bunch of people in close communication with each other with healthcare needs, that's got to be a vulnerable community just about by definition. And we know as well, I mean, we know that it is it's in institutions that it can be quite difficult to stop the spread of coronavirus. So, and, you know, the big things that everyone in the community is aware of, things like the, you know, cruise ships, but also psychiatric hospitals, general hospitals, and nursing homes. I mean, it's places where people are kind of confined, they're at close quarters with one another, and refugee detention centres are, you know, seem like they're another instance where people don't have the capacity to keep in isolation from one another, and their conditions of detention mean that they're more vulnerable. If the infection is introduced, they're more vulnerable to being not able to stop the spread. And so on top of their prior health conditions, this just seems like an injustice that really should have been addressed already by this stage of our response to the COVID-19 pandemic. So exercising for refugees was a way of being able to exercise, which has been a permitted activity under the lockdown restrictions in Queensland. So it was a way of exercising and simultaneously, so while complying with everything necessary for safely exercising, to be in that location in order to be able to just basically let the refugees inside know that we support them and be a public presence manifesting our support for the demands that the refugees themselves were raising, because they have been raising these demands that they be freed in order to be able to practice safe distancing. So if they were able to be released into the community, then they would be able to make the decisions themselves about keeping distant from people. The security guards had tested positive for the COVID-19 virus, the SARS-CoV-2. So it's not like it was just merely some abstract possibility. I mean, it was a real prospect. And I mean, frankly, even if it had maintained in the level of just being an abstract possibility, they still should have had their voices listened to. But so they were rallying every day. They were outside. Those of them who could be on the balcony at the hotel were outside publicly calling for their freedom. And so just by walking around the block, which is a permitted activity, we could be there, be present, demonstrate to them that we could hear them and that we supported them. And just be present. So the day that I was issued with a notice, there were also people carrying signs. So that hadn't happened with all the protests, but it became obvious that part of the way of raising awareness of the plight of people detained would be actually with signs to amplify their call for freedom. I was there was a bit of a bottleneck in the walking around the block, so I was exercising, and there was a bit of a bottleneck, so I went onto the road to go around the bottleneck and so as to maintain my safe distance. And a police officer came up to me, stopped me, made them go over to where they were standing, which actually meant it meant not standing a metre and a half away from people. And so while they questioned me, and they basically the upshot of it was that they said that they basically acknowledged I was exercising, said that because I didn't need to carry a sign in order to exercise, therefore I was not permitted to carry a sign in order to exercise, which completely is not logic. It's a logical fallacy. If you want to sit and read about logical fallacies, it's just not true. And so I did contest the notion with them, and they told me that they were issuing me with a move on notice in relation to it. Now, they didn't actually give me anything written, and I have subsequently read that, this is a bit of legalese, but anyway, I've subsequently read that notices under the Health Act stuff need to be given in writing. So I don't know whether it was even a valid instruction that they gave me, but I certainly didn't. It certainly didn't seem to me that it was could possibly be valid. So when I came back round the block, they stopped me and said, "Oh, you haven't complied with a health order, we're going to give you a infringement. Where do you want us to send it?" And I did say to them, I didn't want them to send it to me at all.
Dr. Manuel is not the only activist to have faced action from the Queensland Police. Here's Brisbane's Greens councillor Jonathan Shree speaking at a press conference following his arrest. The press conference was outdoors, so apologies for the background noise.
On Saturday afternoon, I attended and spoke at a peaceful assembly outside the Kangaroo Point Hotel, where over 120 refugees are being held in indefinite detention. These men are genuine refugees who've passed their health checks and security checks. They've been held in detention for 7 years now, and under international law, they should be released into the community. So that rally on Saturday afternoon was very peaceful. It was an authorised assembly. Hundreds of people attended, and it was generally a very positive atmosphere. And just after 5 p.m., participants moved off the main road and onto a side street in order to allow traffic to move through, and everything seemed to be fine. But then shortly after dark, after the mainstream media left, the police sent in the riot squad without warning or justification to forcibly move people off the road and kettle people onto narrow footpaths where there wasn't enough room for safe distancing, and in a manner that made a lot of people very nervous. So around that point, I was given a move on order to leave the road, which I complied with. I left the road, and a bit later on, I returned to the area with the knowledge of the police to pack up my vehicle, pack up the PA system, and move my vehicle off the road. I parked around the corner and was just getting ready to leave the area for the night, saying goodbye to people, when, without warning, a very aggressive police officer singled me out, marched up to me, and arrested me for failing to comply with a police move-on direction. Now, my view is that that direction itself was unlawful, but that I had still complied with it. I was then taken into custody, held in the watch house for several hours, and the police would not release me unless I signed a very onerous bail condition, which prevents me from travelling within 200 metres of the Kangaroo Point Hotel for any reason at any point up until the first mention date of the charge on the 27th of August. So it is very clear that the police are using these move-on directions and onerous bail conditions to limit people's ability to participate in peaceful protests. Out of the hundreds of people who attended that rally on Saturday afternoon, I was the only person who was arrested and charged, and I don't think that's a coincidence. I think the police are deliberately trying to suppress peaceful protest, and I intend to challenge the charge in court on human rights grounds. And I think this is an attack on the fundamental right to peaceful protest and may also be a violation of the Queensland Human Rights Act. Yesterday, we saw another resident was arrested for failing to comply with a move on direction, which I also believe to be unlawful. Her name is Dane De Leon. She's a local volunteer, very committed refugee advocate. She was standing on a footpath and was given a move on direction on the basis that her presence was causing anxiety to Serco security guards. This is a very concerning attack on people's right to use public space, and again is an example of the police misusing move on powers to criminalise peaceful protests. Dane was also arrested and taken to the watch house and given a similar bail condition, preventing her from returning to the hotel.
Councillor Shree mentioned Dane De Leon, who's an organiser of the Brisbane protests. We spoke to Dane about how she became involved in what is now a blockade of the Brisbane Hotel and her experiences with the Queensland Police.
I saw what was happening in Mantra, the men protesting there, and shortly after, the guys in Kangaroo Point started doing their peaceful protests on the balcony. And I remember seeing a placard with one guy who said that he was detained when he was 15 and he's now 22 years old. And I think that really moved me into doing something about it, and it wasn't too hard to get in contact with refugees and seeing how I can best censor their voices. Their protests really were just they're acting in solidarity, since they've done it a week before us. They've been holding daily protests on the balcony, which have been very peaceful and very effective. And what we've been doing is getting community support outside to let them know that we are supporting them and we do see them. And that's when we do the Friday actions. Every Friday we all show up and see them outside the balcony. So in response to the COVID-19, there was a positive case in the Brisbane APOD already. We've noticed that none of the security guards or any of the worker wore face masks, and they didn't enforce any distancing. The guys also don't really have much capacity to distance because of the space, and they're not allowed to actually leave the premises to go for a walk or anything. Brisbane City Council came to inspect the blockade, and I was walking towards there and filming the interaction. Then two of the officers just turned around and stated their name, and I asked for their badge number. They said I was given a move-on order. I asked what the reason was, and they said that I was interrupting the peace. They said that I was in my presence was inciting anxiety to the workers inside. And when we asked for any confirmation of that, they didn't provide me any. They didn't give me an official move-on order, and I was arrested. The arrest was stressful and was distressing for everyone. And I think that afternoon, when they were trying to take the blockade down, it was a bit disheartening. But also as a response to that, seeing the community show up, there were people who have never been there before who just came to the blockade. And I think the energy and the support has gotten bigger as a response to that, which is positive. We've been pretty clear that we will not be leaving the blockade until our three demands are met. And so one of them is we wanted just free movement in and out of the hotel during the detention center during the day. We want the men to be able to exercise and interact with community members. We think that this is a very reasonable ask and very actionable. Our second one, we don't want any more forced transfers to higher security prisons. Particularly to BITA, the Brisbane Immigration Transit Accommodation.
Actions continue to make conditions for the people held in the alternative places of detention more humane. Here's Chris Breen on upcoming actions in Melbourne, where you can become involved. There are also ways you can support activists, including Chris, in their fight against charges from Good Friday.
So we've got a rally coming up on the 19th of July, which will be the 7th anniversary to the date that the refugees have been locked up. It was when former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd said that anyone who came by boat would never be resettled in Australia. I suppose the first thing would be for people to come along to that protest. It's at the State Library at 2 o'clock. We'll, you know, look at what the health regulations are a bit closer to the time to exactly how we deal with that. And I mean, it's worth pointing out that protest makes a difference. Despite Kevin Rudd saying they'd never be resettled in Australia, despite Scott Morrison, the current Prime Minister, sending a message to families on Nauru that they'd never come here, they are now in the Australian community. The absurd thing with the situation for the Medivac refugees, there are people from Manus and Nauru in the community living amongst us without issue. It was only after February 19 when the coalition wanted to repeal the Medivac legislation that they started locking refugees up to sort of imply that they're a threat. So it's again completely arbitrary as to who is inside and who isn't. So we'd ask people to come to the protest. We've seen in the United States too, the Black Lives Matter protest has made a huge impact. We also encourage people to get involved with the Refugee Action Collective. We're an open group, all volunteers. Anyone can come to our meetings, and they're advertised on our Facebook every Monday at 6:30. We have regular stalls. We will do them on Saturdays at the Preston markets. We've got flyers that people can hand out. There are links to petitions on our website. There's a petition calling for the release of the refugees that over 50,000 people have now signed. I know Amnesty has its petitions as well, which is, you know, we've encouraged people to share those around. So all of those things, there's a lot that needs to be done.
In Brisbane, a blockade of the hotel continues. Here's Dane De Leon.
For the blockade particularly, we need people. We need more bodies there. If to be strategic, you know, if police are giving any move on orders, it's think about, you know, where you're standing and how much you interact with them. And I think, yeah, we just need people. Thank you for everyone who's been giving supplies and so much food and anything else we need. We've had so much banana bread, but if anyone could come down, we would really, really love that.
Here's Dr. Graeme Thom talking about Amnesty's long-term campaigns and how you can become involved.
Well, Amnesty is working both with the help of Craig Foster, one of the Amnesty ambassadors, through our campaign Game Over, to try and make sure that people who are still held offshore, we have just under 400 people still on Nauru and PNG, that we can get them to safety, to the US, to Canada. We're pushing very hard for Australia to accept New Zealand's offer to take people who are offshore. And at the same time, we want to make sure that while people are going through those processes where they're hopefully going to get to somewhere where they get permanent protection, that they're not being housed in detention environments here in Australia. So this week we went down to Parliament House and we handed over a petition to the Minister's office of over 20,000 people who have demanded that these men be released into the community in the same way that everyone else who's been brought here for medical treatment have been released into the community and treated humanely in accordance with our human rights obligations while a durable solution is found for these individuals. So, you know, when we were in Canberra, we met with UNHCR, we met with a number of the embassies, we were able to meet with the New Zealand High Commissioner and again thank New Zealand for the offer that they've consistently put out year after year to take the people who Australia have detained. Well, another key campaign that Amnesty is working on, and one of the things that we've seen very effectively, it's a sad irony really, but Canada, it's been the private sponsors in Canada who have stepped up, and so far a dozen people who have been held offshore have reached Canada through private sponsorship. And Canada has a very effective private sponsorship model whereby members of the community can come together, pull together resources and actually bring a refugee to safety. And they've brought thousands and thousands every year to Canada through this private sponsorship model. sadly, the model in Australia is just not working. But we've seen Australians willing to cough up significant amounts of money to support Canada's private sponsorship to get people to safety to Canada. And so what Amnesty wants to do is make sure that there's a system in place in Australia for private sponsorship whereby Australians can actually use that money and resources and their energy and their goodwill to bring refugees to Australia from around the world, people who are in need and therefore contribute to global safety by supporting, you know, Australia will still have its humanitarian program in the same way that Canada has its government humanitarian program, but we can get additional people to safety and integrated into the community. This is what they've found in Canada by having that wraparound support of sponsors that people integrate better. They find jobs quicker, you know, it helps with kids going to school. You know, that sort of goodwill exists in Australia. And that's why we have our My New Neighbour campaign that is pushing for Australia to reform its private sponsorship system to actually make it work and to tap into the goodwill that exists in this country.
Here's some final words from Chris Breen and Councillor Sri.
It's just gone on too long. And whenever anybody finds out about it, they're horrified. The local residents living in the streets, you know, when I every now and again, I get to speak to conservative radio here and they won't argue, they might argue about whether we should protest or not. They won't argue about the circumstance for the refugees themselves. It's just impossible to defend. So, you know, we are going to keep on organising until all of the refugees are freed, and we think that's something that, you know, should be able to be achieved.
It's extremely concerning and unjust that protesters are being targeted in this way, but the greater injustice is that refugees have been held in indefinite detention for 7 years now for no reason.
Just a final postscript to this episode. Charges against Councillor Sri and Dane De Leon have been dropped by the Queensland Police. This has been Challenging Injustice, the Queensland Northern New South Wales edition. Thanks to Dr. Graham Tom, Dr. Kamala Emanuel, Chris Breen, Dane De Leon and Councillor Sri. You can find links in our episode details to find out more about the Refugee Action Collective in Melbourne and what they're up to, the Brisbane Refugee Alliance and the blockade and how you can help, and Amnesty's Game Over and My New Neighbour campaigns. On behalf of the Activism Leadership Committee of Queensland Northern New South Wales, stay safe, everybody.